Okay.
Welcome to another episode of Big Fish Radio. This is Captain Barry, and we are joined by co-host Robert Lugowitz from Fish and Franks, the manager here, and Miss Alexandra B. Fishin, a worker here at Fish and Franks as well. And for Big Fish Radio today, we're going to be talking about monster triple tail. So with triple tail being our fish of the day, Robert, what can you tell us about people who come in the shop asking about them? What do they like? What are general questions you get?
Where to find them? That's really a big question of where to find them. And then, of course, the second question is always, how do I catch them?
Right. And since this is Big Fish Radio, we want to target the biggest ones possible. So we're going to try to help everyone out there in radio land weed through the smaller ones and meet mediocre-sized ones and go straight for the big ones, right? As much as possible. I know that's...
As much as possible. I mean, the reality is that we've got decent-sized triple tail on a regular basis over here on this, on Southwest Florida's coast, but the largest triple tail in Florida pretty much come from over around the Cape Canaveral area.
Do you know why that is?
No idea, but I know that... It's kind of world renowned for its very large triple tail.
Gotcha. What's for here in like the Charlotte Harbor, you know, Boca Grande area, what is like a large triple tail?
Anything over 10 pounds.
10 pounds, gotcha.
Yeah.
How many inches is that? Because I don't weigh my fish.
I would have to put that roughly in about the 28 inch range.
Yeah. That's a solid fish for sure.
Yeah. Okay. They're a pretty good size. I mean, one that. Because they're actually pretty meaty.
Yeah, they're thick.
They're very thick fish with large scales. I mean, they're actually technically a prehistoric fish. They've been around for tens of thousands of years. I mean, I forget how long they've been around, but they're very old fish.
They don't look modern. I mean, they look like this big brown fish with like three looking tails. That's what they call triple fish.
It's dorsal fin and anal fin are... almost blend into its tail fin, so it looks like one solid tail or three separate tail fins, so hence the name triple tail.
Yeah, and I was going to say the majority of triple tail, like the average size you will see, are going to be in that 15 to 19 inch range.
Right.
Like that's the very common size. So when Robert's saying a 10 pound or bigger, you know, which is around 28 inches or bigger, that's really big for a triple tail. That's big for our area. That's a
Two to 4 pounds seems to be about average, 5 pounds being a little better than average.
Yeah, I've come across a lot of them in that size range. Even though some of them are legal in that range, I just throw them back because you just realize there's not...
Well, didn't they just change the size limit to 18 inches this year?
I believe so. I have to look that up.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think this year, effective July 1st, they raised them up from 15 inches to 18 inches, which... I think it's a good call.
Yeah, because it used to be, I believe, 15, right, Robert?
Yeah.
And 15 is, like, questionable, you're like, in terms of is it worth keeping it clean or not, you know? So
right.
18 is, I think that's a good move on their part.
Yeah. I hear they're delicious.
They're phenomenal table fare, and I'm not a big fish eater, but they're pretty darn good.
Oh, man.
Firm or more of a...
Very firm, white, flaky meat.
Okay.
Gosh.
So that's partially due to their food source. I mean...
Which is?
The majority of them really prefer crustaceans like shrimp and crabs, but they absolutely eat bait fish on a regular basis.
They eat everything, it seems like.
Yeah.
Whatever comes their way.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I haven't heard of anyone catching one on is a topwater, which I'm sure it's been done, but I haven't heard of it. But they catch them all the time on artificials, and a lot of people think you absolutely have to have natural bait for them. That's not the case, but shrimp is perfect for them. You know, it's an ideal, easy, accessible bait.
Mm. That's good.
You know, and, you know, to target them and to bait them kind of comes together all at the same time, so you really don't necessarily, we wouldn't necessarily cover all of separately. It's kind of combines into one when trying to locate a triple tail.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most common, easiest, best ways is actually this time of year when they put, let's see, it's October 1st, the stone crabbers put their stone crab pots out off the beaches out into the Gulf of Mexico.
It's about what, like 3 miles out, would you say?
Oh, anywhere from a mile to 20 miles out, depending.
Oh, really? I've seen them a lot in the springtime around 3 miles out. But
that's because you're actually out there looking for other stuff.
Yeah, it's true. and you see a crab hotline.
You've got other species in mind there. But
very true.
Stone crab season goes from October 15th to May 1st. But they're allowed to put their traps out 15 days ahead of time to soak them. You know, they're soaking the baits and trying to draw in some of those stone crabs. And then they can go out and check them. So those first 2 weeks, those traps aren't touched. Triple tail are very much a structure-oriented fish. They'll sit under a coconut, around channel markers. Crab trap buoys in particular are a real big favorite of theirs. You know, I even saw one in Charlotte Harbor underneath a dead duck. So they like to sit around, and it doesn't have to be anything major. Like I said, a coconut. I mean, a 10-pound triple tail sitting under a coconut. You're not hiding,
it thinks it is.
Right, if they think their like head can get underneath something that's protected, they don't care about the rest of their body sticking out. It's kind of funny because you're like, wow, you're trying to be all sneaky, but your whole body is showing. Like, they'd be really bad at playing hide and go seek.
Exactly. You know, so it's very common where you're not just gonna go out and blatantly go out in the middle of the harbor or anything like that and just cast out and think you're gonna catch a triple tail. It happens, but that's just pure luck.
So what you're saying is, like, when it comes to triple tail fishing, you need to go find structure, and that's, like, going to be your most predictable way of finding them.
But structure that is on top of the surface.
There you go.
Like pilings, channel markers, crab trap buoys, stuff like that. And if you're way offshore, any floating debris, whether it's the sargassum grass out there or a pallet or a tree or an abandoned boat, any of that stuff.
Helium balloons.
Pardon?
Helium balloons?
Yeah, probably so.
What about the boats that are sitting in the harbor?
Yes, you'll find them under them too.
Out by Lashley and I think Fisherman's Village.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I've seen them even on Gilchrist first thing in the morning. Sometimes they'll be sitting under, like, one or two. Sometimes they'll drift in overnight with the current, and they'll just be sitting there on one of the pilings first thing in the morning before anyone gets there. You can kind of pick one off that way too. But that's not too common, but that's... Wherever the tide takes them, it's really
They're found all over the world. Yeah. So the tide does take them everywhere. I mean, I think they're found in all of our major oceans, the Indian, the Pacific, and the Atlantic.
I think I was just like reading something online before we started. I think it's like 92 different countries. Yeah. So they're found everywhere. So
yeah. But for our area, going out and looking for them, honestly, the best way to target them is this time of year.
Okay.
Because you run out on the beaches, the water's cleared up, and you actually parallel those trap lines. So the unfortunate part is that sometimes you could run 30 miles north or south and never see a triple tail at all.
Been there.
And then come back and maybe see one or two, or all of a sudden there's a whole bunch of them that show up. You'll see one on every buoy. It varies. And one day it's 2 miles off the beach, the next day it's 10 miles off the beach. So... You know, it is definitely a game of you're going to burn gas. Mm-hmm. Very rarely is it go out, hey, first crab shot buoy, there's one, and your day's done. There's many, many hours of running time and gas being burned up going looking for a triple tail. So when you decide you want to do it, you really want to be dedicated.
Dedicated, like that's all you're going for, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's other ways where you can actually slow troll along as you're doing it to pick up other incidental species, but your sole focus is running those traps and looking for those fish. Yeah. And basically what it amounts to is you always want to stay just barely on plane, unless you're trolling, and then you can go slower. But stay barely on plane and stay about 25 to 30 feet away from the crab trap buoy, enough where the bow splash is not touching those buoys at all as you're going by. And what you're looking for is, you know, you'd think you'd be looking for something as simple as just a fish sitting under a crab trap buoy. But one thing that triple tail do that's really pretty unusual...
Yeah, is that they're going to be sideways, and it's not even going to look like a fish from a distance. At least that's, I think that's what you're getting at, right?
Yeah, they'll literally lay sideways, almost like a flounder, essentially. They'll just lay sideways right up against the buoy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like a fish because they're already an odd-looking fish anyway, and their coloration is pretty unique because they're dark to yellowish to golds to browns all mixed in together. So they're kind of very cryptic looking. So the best way I describe it to people is that it looks like a used oil rag at like an automotive store.
That's got the
that's
the
been
color.
Wrapped around the buoy almost because it's just very dark, dingy clump of something hanging around that buoy.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to describe it. And I was going to say, since we're talking about the largest triple tail, would you say your tactic here is going to be to run all these trap lines or check these buoys and markers, and because you're basically sight casting, you're going to go look for the biggest one.
Yep.
And then pitch something at him.
Almost always I'm going to be looking for the biggest one and target him that way. Mm-hmm. On the rare occasion, though, like if you just catch a quick glimpse of one sitting on a buoy, sometimes if it's at a real quick glance because, you know, sometimes the glare's wrong or the waves are wrong, but you saw one but you weren't sure, when I swing back around to look at them for the second time, I'm always looking below them, too, because it's not unusual for sometimes two or three to be sitting down lower in the water column down on that string.
Exactly. They can sit down, like you said, 10, 20 feet below on that rope that's just hanging on it, but they're way down there. They're not all going to always be right under the crab pot float right there.
Right. So. And that's because, you know, those ropes gather grass and seaweed. And they've been sitting in there for a while, so they got barnacles and all that stuff on them. So it is some type of structure and habitat where it's bringing in other food sources for those triple tails. So that's why they'll move up and down that whole trap line.
Definitely. Definitely. So what's going to be your, like, since we're in open water and we only have one piece of structure, whether it be a buoy, a marker, what's going to be your preferred tackle setup you're going to use?
I'm mostly going to use my spinning tackle that I would normally use for inshore flats fishing. So, traditionally speaking, a 7-foot rod on a 3 or 4,000 series reel, 10 or 12 pound test mono, or 15 or 20 pound braid, whichever one you like. And then I'm going to use about 2 to 3 feet of 30 pound leader.
Yep, that's exactly what I would use. Okay,
but I will use fluorocarbon out there in this instance because of, you know, you are fishing pretty clear water. Even though they're kind of a dumb fish, there's times where they're very, very picky because they do have pretty good eyesight.
Well, and you have to remember too, sometimes, because I've experienced this, if you get out later in the day, like let's say around noon, and some people have already run these trap lines, sometimes these fish can be picky in the morning, but they've already been pressured.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go out there, you're not the first boat to come across these fish, because it's happened to me where there'll be a big, you check all the traps, there's no fish, and there's only one on one trap, and it's a big one.
Yeah,
and you can tell that as soon as the boat even comes up to it, it pushes down on the crab pot because it's like it's been pressured already. You just know it. It's not acting, you know, as a typical happy triple tail would.
Naive. Right.
Naive. That's yeah. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah. Well, all of these fish that we talk about, the biggest of the fish, they didn't get big being stupid.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's a very good point that they will get leader shy and boat shy for that matter.
Yeah, because majority of the times in those, like, the 15, 18 inches, you see them, you pitch something at them, they don't even, like, they'll shoot over to it and grab it. It's, like, as easy as it gets. But I've noticed some of the big ones can become, they're not as naive as you put it, Alex. So, what would you tie onto your leader, your 30-pound fluorocarbon?
A couple different things. I mean, if I've got shrimp with me, I'm just going to do like a 1-0 or a 2-0 hook. And I don't like a giant shrimp for fishing in general, but I do like something that's a good solid, like 3.5-4 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the size of, say, the average person's middle finger in length and thickness, because you're able to cast it, because a lot of times we're free lining them, which is no weight, no nothing, just the line-to-line knot, leader, hook, and the weight of that shrimp. But there are some instances where I do use a bobber because it makes it a little bit easier to cast it.
And it keeps it in the strike zone a lot of the times as well. Because when you're out in that open water, if you have to cast it right next to the structure for it to fall naturally right in front of him. But if you have a float and there's a tide going, you could cast 5-10 feet above it and let it like literally drift right in front of him as it would be naturally, and keep it at that right depth, which is
right
controlled.
In that height,
and,
yeah. And the other thing for me is like, I'm not the best accuracy caster there is. So having that bobber on there, if I happen to cast past it or an up current or whatever, it allows me to recognize where my bait is actually at, so I can either reel in to recast or know that I need to pull my line a little bit back to me to get it closer to the buoy, or to the left or the right to get it to drift at it naturally as possible. So that's kind of why a bobber to me is really quite nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can also throw an artificial shrimp underneath that bobber the same way. So even if you don't have a live shrimp, you can throw a DOA shrimp underneath it or a gulp shrimp on a little hook. You know, it just drifting through there naturally, still they're going to usually whack it.
Yeah, I've personally thrown a DOA shrimp at these triple tail, and I honestly could say that I feel like sometimes you don't even really need the real thing, because when they see a DOA shrimp or just an artificial shrimp that looks, that resembles a shrimp, typically they just shoot over and just destroy it.
Right.
They destroy it. Like, they're, I feel like they're pelagic fish that are just drifting with the tide, and whenever an opportunity comes for them to eat, majority of the times they're just going to rush over and take that opportunity.
Exactly.
So
now what do you do if you've gone by and you saw that big triple tail sitting there, but then you turn around and come back to that spot and he's gone?
Good question. They didn't disappear. They just, usually what happens, if you're in clear enough water, sometimes I've seen it where they'll shoot down like literally 20 feet down the rope. You
right.
can barely
right up
see them
next to the trap sometimes.
Yeah, they'll shoot all the way down. They don't want to leave that piece of structure that they've found after drifting all that time. So they're going to usually shoot down, and if it's a really big triple tail and you know it's worth it, you can stay off that that piece of structure for 10-15 minutes. Give it some room and like try not to use your engine too loud and see if he becomes happy, and like he'll move slowly and slowly up the crab pot line or the marker, whatever you're fishing. So you could do that, or you could also add a split shot and try to catch him down low, but I feel like they're more wary and not as willing to bite when they move down like that.
Right.
What's your take on it?
And I'll agree with you on that. You know, they do get really spooky, but sometimes it's hard to control the waves and the wind mm-hmm, and all mm-hmm. that stuff when you're out there. So sitting there for 10 or 15 minutes waiting for that to become a happier fish, I'm probably going to be more apt and honestly be more impatient. And I'm going to throw either a split shot on, or I'm going to switch tactics and go to a jig head with either the same thing with a shrimp on it mm-hmm. or a shad tail, you know, just a regular 3.5-inch paddle tail.
Yeah.
And pitch it out there and try to get it to work its way down into that deeper water and see if I can get them to come up and whack it that way.
Yeah. Or what you could do, like on a lot of the new technology, you could put a waypoint on there and like this has a big triple tail, and just keep on cruising. And then on your way back in, if it's on your return, you'd be like, I'm going to go check that exact crab pod or structure on the way back in. And, you know, that way you can keep fishing and
right
potentially have one more to put in the box on your way in.
Right. And here's another thing to think about too. You know, we've kind of mentioned about running the trap line and going past the traps on plane and not spooking the fish off if you can help it, but some people think that they need a trolling motor to do this, and you can actually use a pretty darn big boat without a trolling motor, because the number one thing you do is you don't stop as soon as you see that triple tail. You actually go up another either 100 yards or past the next crab trap buoy, and then turn around and shut down. Not maybe turn your motor off, but at least that's at that point where you start to slow down and figure out, get situated, get a pole in your hand and everything else ready to go. But that's at that point you're trying to figure out which way the wind is blowing, which way the tide is going, and circle back around to put yourself upwind and up tide to blow towards that trap without obviously drifting right over the trap, but to make yourself the best available cast that you can to get to it. And I like to set it up where I'm positioned enough where I will walk to the bow of the boat and be as close as I can for that first cast
That's the one that's going to count.
And then either followed up with a second cast in case I screw up, or someone else is there with me that can also follow up with a cast in case there's a hiccup in any way, shape, or form. Because you also got to remember at the same time, you may hook these crab trap buoys or the crab line while you're casting out, and you want to still have a shot at that fish, so a secondary person there or a second rod ready to cast for oops, I missed, or oops, I got tangled up, and make that next cast before you really go over there and mess things up.
Gotcha. When you were talking about the shrimp with a split shot or on a jig head, how are you working that?
Must still let it drift down as naturally as possible. You know, I won't let it lay on the bottom. I'll cast it just up current and let it slowly sink down, trying to parallel as close to possible to that crab trap rope as possible, and let that hopefully let that triple tail see it.
Right. I was just going to follow that up with the whole goal, because it's very visual. You want the triple tail to like show interest in your bait, and if he turns off the structure and starts coming to your bait, what I usually do is open the bail and let him, because once he's interested in it, he's going to go and eat it. So like if you're, for instance, if he's 10 feet down and you have it on a jig head and it's going right by him, and he stays to the structure and it keeps drifting by him, give it like 2-3 feet where he's clearly not showing an interest, then just reel and bring up your bait and do another drift.
Okay.
If you put it in front of him and he turns and it's on a jig head and it's slowly gliding away, he turns though, you can like hold it right there because he's going to come eat it, or you can open the bail and slowly let it keep, you know, drifting naturally, and he'll eat it. The whole goal is to have him show interest, and once he does, you're typically gonna get the bite.
Right. No, and that's a very, very good point. There was another point about with the bait earlier too, and I can't remember what it was, but if they do show that interest, and they will swim 20-30 feet away, so like if you cast out and let it follow that crab trap line down and you feel he didn't take it and you start reeling up and you see him following it, same concept, either slow down or open up that bail and let that bait start to fall back down naturally. Now, there is one little hiccup out there sometimes that's going to happen. Like I said, you're going to hook that crab trap buoy and that rope. Technically, you cannot mess with that buoy. It is federally illegal to touch that buoy, so I don't like to leave a hook or a lure in a crab trap line, because for the safety of the crabber that is going to come out there and check his stuff when he's pulling that pot up, running his hook, you know, hook into his hand potentially, it sucks. But realistically, to be on the safe side so you don't get charged with some federal crab offense, you are better off just breaking that hook and leaving it on the line.
If you're careful enough, it's usually not that big of an issue. Like, you should be fine, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, usually, I mean, if it's right there under the buoy, I'll pull right up to it, and I will try to pop it loose or reach down and pop it off the hook. But I, under no situation, am going to lift that buoy up out of the water and try to pull up some of that line, even if it's 4 or 5 feet down and I think I can get to it. I won't do that. I don't want to take that risk. I would rather have that crabber mad at me than trying to go to federal court to try to explain what I was doing, because at that point it's too expensive for me. You know, and I just don't want to see somebody get in trouble with that, because people are trying to do the right thing and end up getting in trouble with the wrong thing.
Yeah, I gotcha. Well, that concludes our episode on Big Triple Tail on Big Fish Radio. Thank you guys for listening, and this is Captain Barry. You can find me on tarponworld.com. You can find Alex on Alexander B. Fishing on Facebook, and you can find Robert in the store. See you later.